For decades, humans around the world have reported sightings of dark, triangular-shaped UFOs, often featuring three bright white lights at each corner and a dull red light or structural features on the middle surface. Unlike classic flying saucers, orbs, egg-shaped craft, Tic Tacs, and strange organic shapes like the controversial jellyfish UAP, triangles have historically not been associated with non-human intelligence, but instead with deep-sixed, black-budget human reverse engineering efforts. This is somewhat due to triangular craft lacking many of the hallmarks of what some would consider NHI craft. No visible means of propulsion, a lack of harsh angles and surface features, missing rivets, bolts, and seams, as well as many triangular sightings occurring in concentrated periods over populated regions and military bases. Triangle craft were further touched upon in the fall 2024 UAP hearings, in which the shadowy, unacknowledged special access program, Immaculate Constellation, saw its public report released to Congress and the American people. At least some of the triangles among the rarest UAP configurations reported in the Immaculate Constellation report have been confirmed by the USAP to be ARV, Alien Reproduction Vehicles, the same term used by presiding program members to label the Fluxliner flying saucer reproduction vehicle observed by Brad Sorensen at the 1988 Norton Air Force Base show. And Representative Eric Burleson told me this was not the first time, in fact, he had heard the term ARV.
And I've seen and listened to some and had conversations about this with people from the UFO community that will say that there's two types of aircraft. There's craft that is truly extraterrestrial, and then there's craft that we have reverse engineered and created and or reproduced, right? And so that report, what is unique about the Immaculate Constellation report is it talks about these reproduced, you know, basically us reproducing what is crashed.
But are these triangles whose descriptions are oftentimes near identical indeed human-made? What can we make of the whistleblower testimony of Edgar Fouché, who described these craft in great detail, including a name, the TR Tactical Reconnaissance 3B? What valuable evidence can we gather from slightly different triangle variations seen from the 1980s and 1990s? And why would the X-Files TV show contract a triangle design from an artist who drew an alleged reverse-engineered craft called the XF-131 Super Sentinel, instructed by two Lockheed Martin and two Northrop Grumman engineers? Hey guys, it's UAP Gerb, and I am thrilled for you to join me on another investigation into alien reproduction vehicle, this time focusing on the black triangle seen throughout the globe for decades. Let's venture into the full story of the TR-3B ARV, a possible parallel joint Northrop and Lockheed ARV hailing from the Lockheed Martin Hellendale plant, and strange possible ARV prototypes seen throughout the 1980s and 1990s with odd features. Let us investigate the origins, configurations, and purposes of these craft allegedly built from NHI technology. On November 13, 2024, the term ARV was entered into the congressional hearing record with the Immaculate Constellation Report. No, this term did not originate with Stephen Greer in 2001. It can indeed be traced back to 1988 with alleged firsthand witness Brad Sorensen, who observed DOD and private industry attempts to reverse engineer anti-gravity flying saucer craft. And now, the Immaculate Constellation Unknown Anonymous Whistleblower Report has labeled another craft configuration as alien reproduction vehicles, the Triangle. The report, whose historical data tracked back to 2009, discussed a large equilateral triangle directly appearing over intelligence-collecting vessels. Captured by INDOPACOM, the U.S. Indo-Pacific Command, the triangle hovered and rotated slowly 500 to 1,000 meters above the ocean. Three bright points were seen at each bottom corner of the horizontally rotating triangle, with the horizontal bar of sweeping lights partially observed. Collected intelligence revealed this triangle was a reproduction craft. A second INDOPACOM entry detailed a fighter jet-sized equilateral ARV triangle of unknown origin hovering less than 200 meters above a vessel. At least two lights were observed on the craft, with at least one more obstructed on the underside of the craft, with the triangle slightly positioned at an upward angle. In their 2023 and 2024 historical reports, Aero listed triangles as solely 3-4% of all reported UAPs, a morphology that is indeed quite uncommon. Project Blue Book, the U.S. Air Force's official UFO investigation program from 1952 to 1969, cataloged over 12,000 cases of varying quality. Let's reference this paper titled The Blue Book Unknowns by Don Berliner, which utilizes numerous criteria to analyze only the most unexplained of Blue Book cases. In the 1950s, we find solely 4 recorded anomalous triangle sightings. These triangles are often described as colorful, a far cry from our dark gray, black craft with 3 lights, the subject of today's analysis. Although Aero and Blue Book are not necessarily trustworthy, we can form a strong observation here. Analyzing historical UFO reporting trends, thank you to UFOsearch.com and Richard Geldreich, we can directly observe the time period of 1940 to 1970 and 2000 to modern day, see few triangular craft sightings reported. 1970 to 2000, particularly the 1980s and 1990s, see an overwhelming number of reported triangular UFO sightings. Not only does this confirm the data and claims made further in this video, but this also suggests a worldwide multi-decade UFO flap of triangle-shaped craft. With the cases and testimony we will explore in this video, a strong thesis could be constructed that sometime in the 1970s, legacy UFO programs began constructing triangular alien reproduction vehicles based on non-human triangular craft, and iterated on and tested such craft over military bases during the 1980s to 2000s. And let's also reference the controversial Majestic 12 document titled SOM 101, or the Special Operations Manual I covered at length with Ryan Wood. In the description of craft from this document, allegedly dated 1954, we can find description of triangular-shaped craft amongst the saucers, spheres, cigars, etc. The triangles read, quote, "This craft is believed to be new technology due to the rarity and recency of observations. Radar indicates an isosceles triangle profile, the longest side being nearly 300 feet in length. Little is known about the performance of these craft due to the rarity of good sightings, but they are believed to be capable of high speeds and abrupt maneuvers similar to or exceeding the performance attributed to types A and C." In the midst of a slew of anonymous triangular sightings with strange lights and fixtures in the 1980s and 1990s, which we will discuss later, the 1989 Belgian UFO wave arose. All too often associated with the Patrick M. hoaxed photograph or labeled a case of mass delusion, the Belgian Triangle UFO wave has incredible amounts of worthwhile investigation. The wave is not the subject of today's video, but let's briefly discuss. In November of 1989, hundreds of reports surfaced from Belgium of a large, flat, triangular-shaped craft with lights underneath flying at low altitudes. The event culminated on the night of March 30th, 1990, where an unknown object was tracked by radar and pursued by 2 Belgian F-16 fighters who were unable to locate the triangle. Internal DoD documents, once classified, revealed U.S. authorities investigated the case and even confirmed to the Belgian Air Force and Ministry of Defense that no USAF stealth aircraft such as the B-2 or F-117 were used in the region. But what if this wave of sightings strangely caught on radar on March 30, 1990, was a series of tests over an allied nation of a stealth craft even more secret than the B-2 and F-117? What if this aircraft program was deep-sixed and embedded within special access programs, within reach of only those with need-to-know access and the highest clearances the U.S. had to offer? What if this craft was the TR-3B reverse-engineered triangle? In at least 3 of my projects, I have mentioned the testimony of USAF Master Sergeant Edgar Fouché and his claims of anti-gravity reverse-engineered triangular craft called TR-3B. Black budget operations involving Nellis/Area 51 and Edwards Air Force Base, and involvement of contractors such as Lockheed Martin in non-human intelligence technology exploitation. Well, now is finally the time to explore his entire testimony. Edgar Albert Fouché, sometimes referred to as Edgar Rothschild Fouché, was born in 1948 in South Central Georgia to 5th-generation Americans. His family history consisted of numerous individuals in military intelligence and classified projects. During the Vietnam conflict while attending college, Fouché worked as a machinist making bombs. In 1968, the young man was drafted into USAF for pararescue basic training. After fracturing his ankle at Fort Benning, Edgar completed training in electronics, communication, intelligence, and cryptological methods. From 64 to 74, Fouché was stationed at myriad tactical air command and air training command bases, including 3.5 years stationed in Vietnam and surrounding Asian bases. Within USAF, Fouché earned degrees in electronics and avionics engineering, as well as a bachelor's in business, and enjoyed numerous awards and a prestigious reputation for his advanced skill set often sought after by military brass. In the late 1970s, Fouché would see a series of USAF-mandated stations at the now infamous Groom Lake Area 51 facility with a top-secret clearance with crypto access. Fouché was considered an Air Force expert with classified electronic countermeasure test equipment, cryptological test equipment, and automatic test equipment, all while receiving around 4,000 hours of technical training from USG and DoD, half of which was classified. Late in his career, working 8 years as a defense contractor and engineering manager, Fouché dealt with classified black programs developing state-of-the-art electronics, logistic, and technical data and automatic testing equipment. The Master Sergeant participated as a hand-picked key member to work on USAF fighters such as the F-15 Eagle Air Superiority Fighter, the A-10 Warthog, the P-1 Lancer Bomber, and the F-117A Stealth Fighter. Fouché claimed to have worked alongside the Defense Advanced Research Center in 1979, which he stated was a minimum 10-story underground facility between Area 51 Groom Lake. Fouché was recruited to Groom Lake out of his station at Edwards Air Force Base Jet Propulsion Laboratory, which he claimed also consisted of deep underground facilities. The Defense Advanced Research Center, DARS, not to be confused with DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Project Agency, was actually a proposed institution. Let's reference this Declassified Advanced Project Research Agency, ARPA, a lot of acronyms I know, study written in 1973. This study was written as a historical evaluation of the R&D Management Institution, ARPA, who at this time had established remarkably little in the way of official record or institutional memory. On page 82 of the document under ARPA Laboratories discussing advanced aerospace projects, we find a DoD directive showing the Army Ballistic Missile Agency was considered for transfer into the Defense Advanced Research Center, linking the department to the aforementioned Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And it is worth noting the Army Ballistic Missile Agency was commanded by Nazi V-2 rocket scientist and Operation Paperclip transfer Wernher von Braun. Von Braun's mentor was father of German rocketry Hermann Oberth, who performed extensive study on UFOs. But back to Fouché. It was here at DARS he would work with advanced digital technologies and gain knowledge of human-made reverse-engineered craft. Master Sergeant Edgar Fouché made his first public disclosures regarding reverse-engineered anti-gravity triangular craft called TR-3B in his 1998 book Alien Rapture, and presented this data for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, and IUFOC, the International UFO Congress, after years of interviews, research, and preparation. These disclosures were sourced from five close friends within DoD and classified programs, as well as Fouché's firsthand experience at Area 51 Groom Lake in the DARC. We will focus mostly on his 1998 IUFOC presentation, as it serves as an extremely comprehensive baseline summary of Fouché's testimony, while also pulling clips and contextually relevant data from other sources and Fouché interviews. His book Alien Rapture is extremely similar to Secret Machines by Tom DeLonge, where alleged non-fiction events are shrouded in a guise of fiction to protect names, dates, and locations. Fouché's 98 testimony revolved around the revelations of secret government technology and reverse-engineered extraterrestrial artifacts. Edgar set out with the specific goal of informing the public on the facts behind the infamously cited flying triangles.
Before I'm through, you'll know exactly what the flying triangle is, the one that's been sighted around the world. It's the most exotic and classified aerospace vehicle that's ever been built. It may be stealthily hovering over Phoenix, Belgium, or your city.
And we must note, outside of his own personal sightings of the craft while in service, Fouché did not work on the TR-3B. He relayed much of the data he gathered around the TR-3B from his five close sources. Let's discuss these five close sources who build much of the foundation for Fouché's disclosures. Edgar's closest ally was Gerald, a former National Security Agency investigator and TREAT team member. TREAT stands for the Tactical Reconnaissance Engineering Assessment Team, aka what we might call the Men in Black. I can find only one publicly available mention of TREAT, and this is from Liechtenstein's Crown Prince Hans Adams in a letter to Dr. Stephen Greer dated August 31, 1997. This letter from an unknown sender discusses Hans Adams and his mention in a book by author Tom Bowers called Nazi Gold. Hans had previously spoken and collaborated with Greer on UAP issues to an unknown degree. This sender accused the Crown Prince of having supported counterintelligence operations against the American people on the subject of UFOs. And in this letter, the sender directly accused Hans Adams of funding TREAT. Quote, Adams' funding should be focused on his support for TREAT and its Grand Dame, who is wed to a former U.S. Army general, ex-head of Army Intelligence and Security Command, end quote. The general in question here is U.S. Army General and founder of the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command, INSCOM, Albert Stubblebine. Now, I have good reason to believe Army INSCOM is likely associated with UFO crash retrievals, but we will discuss this in a future project. Major General Albert Stubblebine himself allegedly intimidated Stephen Greer to discontinue investigating UFO black projects.
And the level of corruption is worrisome. Now, in 92, General Albert Stubblebine III, Bert, who had been head of special forces and Army intelligence, Fort Huachuca, he intercepted me after we had this major contact event out in Florida. And near Pensacola. And he subsequently, about a month later, personally offered me $2 billion to not pursue what I was doing and become part of his team.
And Stubblebine is currently witness 10658 in Greer's witness log. His witness description reads, quote, has been involved since the 1960s, former head of Fort Huachuca Army Intelligence where ET craft and bodies are stored, end quote. What we can learn here is that quite possibly TREAT is the real-life Men in Black housed within U.S. Army INSCOM. Okay, but back to Fouché and the first of the five disclosure advocates and team members, Gerald.
TREAT stands for Tactical Reconnaissance Engineering Assessment Team. I think some of you call them Men in Black. They work for the Department of Energy and the National Security Agency. This was his cover. But ultimately, the National Security Agency controlled all his movements and everything he did. His job required him to watch employees with top secret and Q clearances and other classified clearances at the Nevada test site, the Nellis Range, Los Alamos, Sandia, and many other bases. He spent a lot of time out at Area 51 for years before I even knew what he was involved in. This is where previously, the most classified aerospace testing in the world took place. You may know it as Groom Lake, Watertown, the Ranch, or Dreamland. He was found dead of a heart attack a year after our last meeting.
The second individual, Sal, worked directly with the National Security Agency with electronics intelligence and became a defense contractor upon his retirement. Sal worked for the company that created the TR-3B gravity disruption device called the Magnetic Field Disruptor. More on this later. The third friend, Doc, was an SR-71 spy plane pilot and USAF test pilot at Edwards Air Force Base. Those who have watched my reverse engineering project at Edwards video will immediately recognize the importance of Edwards and the 412th test group comprising the Edwards Test Pilot School. If you haven't, I recommend watching that, but we'll explain more during Fouché's testimony. The fourth friend, Dell, served with Fouché during Vietnam. Dell's father worked for the NSA for over 25 years and sent Fouché a host of Majestic 12 documents. The fifth member, Rand Budd, was a DoD contractor electronics engineer who worked on top-secret R&D programs with electronic countermeasures. The men were perturbed by the fact each had been privy to unusual phenomena, extremely advanced technology, and unidentified aerial vehicles that had not been reported.
As we sat at a table in a dark corner of the Silver Dollar Saloon in Las Vegas, discussing our experiences and swapping knowledge, each of the group of five assured me that they trusted me enough to write about their secrets and protect them. We agreed to get together the next year with an understanding that I would contact each of them and set up the meeting. In the meantime, I wrote down all of our notes and their input and their contacts from other friends about unusual phenomena and their personal sightings. Many of the things the group revealed to me were startling, even to me, who had worked 25 years on black programs.
But before we continue, let's walk things back and get to know Fouché and his station in black programs a little bit better. In 1979, after working at Nellis with top secret crypto access clearance, Fouché received a request for temporary reassignment to a place with no name. Fouché's commanding officer had no idea where he was going, who he would be working with, or what he would be working on. And while we're here, let's take a longer look at this document obtained via FOIA, discussing a promotional recommendation for Fouché. Fouché was assigned to Detachment 3, AFFTC, which is the Air Force Flight Test Center Detachment from Edwards Air Force Base that runs operations at Area 51 Groom Lake. Remember how Witness Ed stated he was read into UAP programs at Nellis and Area 51 S4 before moving on to become a test director of reverse engineered craft at Edwards. Edgar left on a Monday morning at 4:30 a.m. and boarded a dark blue USAF bus with blacked out windows. 28 other people sat on the bus, not including two security policemen. All personnel were ordered not to speak to one another. After several hours, the bus came to rest and Fouché knew immediately where he was, Groom Lake, Area 51. According to the Master Sergeant, the top secret SR-75, SR-74, and TR-3B operated out of Groom Lake and have historically been misidentified as UFOs. Upon reaching Groom Lake, the bus entered a hangar and the doors were shut. Security personnel checked in Fouché and the others. He was given a pair of heavy glasses, similar to welder's goggles, that obscured his peripheral vision and restricted vision to within 30 feet. For the next 10 consecutive days and further on follow-up visits, Fouché's routine was the same: leave Nellis before sunrise and return to Nellis after dark. Fouché would write down everything he saw and heard at Groom Lake, including hearing topics discussed such as pulse detonation, cyclotronic radiation, quantum flux transduction field generators, quasi-crystal energy lenses, and EPR quantum receivers. Pulse detonation may remind you of the Aurora Pulsar craft seen by Brad Sorensen at the 1988 Norton Air Force Base show.
I'm not going to talk about quasi-crystals. I'll make a prediction. Quasi-crystals is the key to everything you wanted to ever know about how they got here. And that's all I'm going to say about it now. Except one of the quasi-crystals is a hydrogen crystal.
His station at Groom Lake is also where Fouché would meet Treat, aka Men in Black agent Gerald. According to Fouché, on Area 51 is the super secret laboratory named the Defense Advanced Research Center, of which we can only find one official mention. DARS consists of 10 underground stories next to a mountain near Papoose Lake south of Groom Lake and is nestled next to a hangar in the side of a mountain, which stores the TR-3B reverse engineered craft. The DARS' objectives were fully realized in the mid-1980s, according to Fouché, when it was bolstered with SDI money under the Reagan administration. Viewers of my channel will recall multiple times in which I have discussed sources commenting on the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI, under Reagan, serving a secondary purpose to protect the U.S. mainland from ballistic missiles. This secondary purpose being the detection of and offensive capabilities against UAP. Fouché claimed his sources estimated up to 35% of SDI's funding was siphoned off to support USAF black programs starting in 1982. First-hand ARV witness Brad Sorensen was additionally told in 1988 by the men in charge of the ARV exhibit they were requesting funding to build more of these reverse-engineered craft. The Reagan admin placed extreme importance on the building of ARVs. Shockingly, Fouché stated defense contractor EG&G not only provided classified R&D for black projects, technical and scientific support for nuclear and energy R&D, but also EG&G built these hidden bunkers, mountain hangars, and vast underground facilities at Groom Lake, Papoose, and Mercury for the government, housing facilities such as DARS. The mention of these facilities ties into the topic of DUMS, deep underground military bases, which I will explore in the future. Alongside EG&G, the RAND Corporation more than likely has a hand here. Edgar would also claim he gathered knowledge EG&G was awarded an indefinite contract for Project Red Light to support the Department of Energy and military. This contract gave them responsibility to assist in the recovery of nuclear materials in cases of mishaps and to provide aerial and ground security for highly classified government and military sites. One's mind may be drawn here to the nuclear emergency support team supported by EG&G, but Project Red Light was also relayed to Leonard Stringfield in his crash retrieval status reports by a witness claiming the project served to test NHI and reverse engineered craft on the Nellis test range after the craft had been shipped from Edwards Air Force Base. Sources of the Master Sergeant claimed as of 1992, the Air Force conducted a contingency plan due to so many public eyes on Area 51. This would see the majority of exotic aircraft platforms relocated to Utah, likely Dugway Proving Grounds, Colorado, Alaska, Greenland, Diego Garcia, and south of Area 51 to S4.
But at Papoose, where they store one of the TR-3Bs, and they maintain these as their depot, it's built into the side of a mountain, cut out of stone. They have a holographic generator that generates the side of the mountain. And when you're 10 feet from the side of this mountain and looking into the hangar, you can only see a mountain. And that's why when the Russian satellites fly over to verify the SALT treaty, when their infrared and other spectral scanners shoot down at Groom, they only see stone, because that's all that's there.
Just before this date of 1992, there is strangely enough evidence to show a heavy focus on strange exotic aircraft programs out of Area 51, possibly UFO related. In 1990, Jane's defense writer James Goodall revealed a thesis of at least 8 black programs flying out of Area 51 Groom Lake, including a silent triangle utilizing unconventional technologies. A source Goodall knew for 12 years was stationed at Groom Lake and explained that UAP positively exist at the base, while another source of his stated, quote, "We have things out there that are literally out of this world, better than Star Trek or anything you can see in the movies," end quote. And now we finally get into a full body description of the TR-3B craft.
Finally, I've saved the best for last. The operational model of the TR-3B. A friend of mine said he'd never forget the sight of the alien-looking TR-3B landing at Papoose, south of Groom. The pitch-black triangular-shaped TR-3B is rarely mentioned, and then only in whispers.
This craft, the most classified aerospace development program in existence at the time, codename Astra, Advanced Stealth Technology Reconnaissance Aircraft, saw 200 feet diameter testing models and 3 and 600 feet diameter operational models. The Tactical Reconnaissance TR-3B operated as the most exotic model under the Aurora program, according to Fouché, the same program umbrella that oversaw the pulse detonation UAV Pulsar craft observed by Brad Sorensen. And we may have some clues regarding this family of Aurora craft in previous DoD budgets. In DoD procurement programs, we can find an Aurora project the DoD planned to spend $80 million on in fiscal year 86 and $2.3 billion on in fiscal year 87. This 25 times increase in spending is enormous and at the time was double the cost of the B-2 Spirit Bomber program. The Aurora program may have included the reverse-engineered TR-3B, Lockheed Pulsar as seen by Sorensen, and a little-known craft titled the SR-33A, introduced by Dr. Michael Wolfe, an alleged UAP consultant to the National Security Council's Special Subcommittee. Similar to TR-3B and Pulsar, the SR-33A allegedly utilized conventional fuel and anti-gravity field propulsion systems to operate under a secret space program. The first flight-ready operational model of TR-3B occurred in the early 1990s, built through SDI and black budget monies. By 1994, at least 3 of the billion-dollar-plus operational models were flying. But Fouché had seen the prototype model, or a different model, 3 times previously, far before 1994. And according to his sources, there were numerous prototypes with the first anti-gravity warping craft flying in the early 1970s. Not only did he claim to have seen photographs of TR-3B from a C-130 flying mission support for the reverse-engineered craft, but Fouché also claimed to have observed the triangles one night in 1975, high in the atmosphere over Edwards Air Force Base, as well as 1976 within the southern part of Nellis Range, and lastly in 1979 at Groom Lake. This prototype model looked fairly similar to Fouché's official model, but with different engines on the tip and no rotable crew compartment. I do recommend checking out part 6 of author Andrew Johnson's interviews with Fouché to hear more about his sightings. For the interest of time, I will not show these long clips here. But let's hear about more aspects of the TR-3B Fouché learned from sources within Black Programs and his five disclosure comrades, and then discuss how the propulsion and engineering system allegedly functioned. According to these sources, the original TR-3B craft design was reverse-engineered by Sandia National Labs and Livermore Laboratories from a non-human intelligence crash recovery from an unknown date or location. Sandia may be familiar to some, as the laboratory nestled within Kirtland Air Force Base, New Mexico, has been often historically implicated with UFO material recovery. Seen numerous mentions within the MJ-12 document, such as the Eisenhower briefing document and Interplanetary Phenomenon Unit reports. Livermore Labs, now called Lawrence Livermore, is one of three National Security Enterprise FFRDCs, federally funded research and development centers, sponsored by the DOE to support U.S. nuclear deterrence. The other two locations are Los Alamos National Labs and, of course, Sandia. I myself have been told alongside UARC's university-affiliated research centers, FFRDCs are semi-private institutions that serve to operate alongside DoD and corporate legacy programs for material exploitation, reverse engineering, etc. Other FFRDCs include Oak Ridge National Laboratory, owned by Battelle, where our good friend Sean Kirkpatrick ran off to after Arrow, as well as numerous institutions run by the MITRE Corporation and RAND Corporation. MITRE and RAND will receive their own projects in the near future, as I believe these semi-private institutions are integral corporations involved in legacy programs. Those unfamiliar with UARC just need to look back at my work on the 1965 Kecksburg crash. Dr. Eric A. Walker, president of Penn State, self-admitted he oversaw the Kecksburg crash site. Walker had also previously set up Penn State's UARC, the Applied Research Laboratory, at the behest of the U.S. Navy. And let's not forget, as of 2024, the untrustworthy Arrow, under new leadership of Dr. Kozlowski, admitted Arrow, a likely whistleblower honeypot with contracts with SandCorp, a company built to prevent whistleblower leaks, stated Arrow works alongside UARC and FFRDC.
Sure. Right now, most of our collaborations that are veering towards academia are with university-affiliated research centers associated with universities or with FFRDCs.
All this is to say, Fouché's accusations that Sandia and Lawrence reverse-engineered NHI craft is a sober and rational statement. Edgar would also state the TR-3B program was managed by the NRO, CIA, and NSA, and the craft was built primarily by Lockheed, Boeing, Northrop, Teledyne Ryan, and a number of other defense contractors to keep R&D compartmentalized. There is a lot to break down here. One, due to the excellent work of Chris Sharp and an upcoming interview that I have with Dr. Eric Davis, yes, of the Wilson-Davis memo, we can implicate the CIA Directorate of Science and Technology with support agencies such as the National Reconnaissance Office, National Underwater Reconnaissance Office, National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, and likely the National Security Agency as leading teams behind UFO crash retrievals. Fouché mentioning Lockheed Martin needs no further explanation. I do recommend checking out both my Mark McCandlish video and Lockheed Martin investigation. Find them in the video description. Now, Boeing is indeed an interesting mention. Director of Edwards 412th Electronic Warfare Group, Ed, stated he worked alongside Boeing and Lockheed on reverse-engineered craft systems at the Nellis Range. Boeing will additionally receive a video of its own, but for now let's reference a fascinating 2013 project by stealth aircraft researcher John Joseph. Joseph claims Boeing served as the primary contractor in Project Brilliant, an SDI program with the goal of setting up an electromagnetic shield around the U.S. using a boomerang-shaped craft that could loiter over cities. Northrop Grumman has, as much as Lockheed Martin, been historically implicated with the creation of TR-3B. Let's hold off on discussing them for now, as later I would like to tackle a possible triangle variant constructed by Northrop Grumman. Fouché knew the TR-3B housed a crew of four and served as logistics support and transport for a secret space command. These pilots were top graduates of Navy and USAF test pilot schools, mainly out of the Edwards 412 test school. Edwards' witness, Ed, additionally made these same claims. The craft employed two nuclear reactors, was comprised of advanced composites, metal materials, and titanium, and employed variable vectored intake and thrusters on the edges, and advanced multi-mode propulsion engines on each tip of the triangle. The triangle has three lights on each tip, a large diffuse light on the bottom center due to the MFD drive, and featured almost no sound bar a magnetic humming. The TR-3B outer coating was reactive to electrical radar stimulation and can change reflectiveness radar absorption. Fouché described the outer skin slash panels as electrochromatic, which would camouflage the craft for daytime stealth operations. But let's further dive into the propulsion system from Edgar's own words.
The circular plasma field accelerator ring, called the magnetic field disruptor, surrounds a rotatable crew compartment. It's far ahead of anything you've ever imagined as far as technology. Sandia and Livermore Laboratories developed a reverse-engineered MFD, and I believe the government will go at any lengths to protect this technology. But you're not going to be able to build one of these from what I tell you, nor am I. So the government will go to any lengths. Believe me, the plasma in this accelerator is mercury-based. It's pressurized at 250,000 atmospheres. At a temperature 150 degrees Kelvin, superconductivity, and accelerated to 60,000 revolutions per minute to create a superconductive plasma with a resulting gravity energy. The MFD generates a magnetic vortex field, which disrupts and neutralizes the effects of gravity on mass within proximity by 89%. Do not misunderstand, this is not anti-gravity. Anti-gravity you can use as a propulsive force. The mass of the circular accelerator and all the mass within the accelerator, such as the crew compartment, avionics, MFD systems, fuels, environmental systems, and nuclear reactor, are reduced by 89%. This causes the effect of making an aircraft extremely light and able to outperform any aircraft yet constructed, except, of course, those we didn't build. TR-3B is a high-altitude stealth reconnaissance platform with indefinite loiter time. Once you get it up there at speed, it doesn't take much propulsion to maintain altitude. With the vehicle's mass reduced by 89%, the vehicle can travel at Mach 9 vertically or horizontally. So for those that have had sightings of things making right, and they're not perfect right turns, obviously. Nothing can make a perfect right turn. It's against the laws of physics. But it sure looks like a right turn at a distance. For those that have seen it, that's how they do it. The TR-3B uses three multimode thrusters mounted on each corner of the triangular platform. The multimode propulsion system can operate in the atmosphere with thrust provided by the nuclear reactor, and in the upper atmosphere with hydrogen propulsion, and in orbit with combined hydrogen-oxygen propulsion.
A key component of TR-3B propulsion, as described by Fouché, states its MFD technology built from reverse-engineered UAP is not anti-gravity necessarily. Anti-gravity, by definition, provides a repulsive force that can be used for propulsion. MFD creates a quote-unquote disruption of the Earth's gravitational field upon the mass within the circular accelerator. Such systems leveraged from non-human technology may indeed be present in highly secret but acknowledged aircraft systems. One such example may be the Northrop Grumman B-2 stealth bomber. UFO researchers such as Dr. Richard Boylan have reported three-star generals and retired USAF Colonel Donald Ware have disclosed the B-2 carries onboard electrogravitic systems to cause internal mass reduction on the wings and fuselage of the craft, which directly leads to the over $1 billion price tag for each craft.
The question is, and Mark talked about this before, is there more going on to the B-2 than meets the eye? Aviation Week Space Technology, March 9th, 1992, had a very interesting article from people who worked at Northrop who were very upset that the technology associated with the B-2 program was not being trickled down to the public industry. They talk about how the B-2 electrically charges the leading edge of the wing to reduce the radar cross signature. That's what you see in this diagram right here. and then negatively charges the exhaust gases to reduce the infrared signature. This is the same type electrogravitic technology that T. Townsend Brown had originally proposed in the 1930s. So this technology might date back a lot earlier than we originally thought.
And before we move on, remember earlier when Edgar Fouché mentioned Astra, Advanced Stealth Technology Reconnaissance Aircraft, served as the codename for TR-3B. Well, we may in fact have a crash retrieval of this craft. In Ryan Wood's masterpiece, Magic Eyes Only, we can find a case dated September 26, 1994 from Boscombe Down, England. This case file references a publication from the November 1994 edition of Air Force Monthly, which discusses an unusual crash landing on the runway of the UK government's highly secret Boscombe Down facility. Rumors quickly circulated the crash was of a flying triangle seen by UFO witnesses for decades. The Air Force Monthly article reads, quote, "Shortly after the crash, an unmarked civilian registered CIA-operated Boeing 737 and a similarly anonymous DC-8 visited, and 2 days later the wreck was loaded onto a CC-5 Galaxy and flown to Air Force Plant 42 at Palmdale, California. The secrecy surrounding the incident has led to speculation that the aircraft involved was a TR-3A, the existence of which the U.S. government has yet to officially acknowledge," end quote. While this publication mentions the crash of a TR-3A, and Fouché does indeed state the TR-3A exists but is remarkably different from TR-3B, it's worth noting quite often in the public realm, TR-3A and TR-3B are often used almost interchangeably, so perhaps this crash case is referencing TR-3B. And this distinction is key to explore further, as terminology around TR-3A is quite confusing. Quite often, I have seen the TR-3A referred to as the Pumpkin Seed, a craft utilizing pulse detonation engines, the same unmanned craft Brad Sorensen saw in 1988. While other sources refer to TR-3A as a delta-shaped fighter featuring a cockpit, pulse detonation engines, and electrogravitics for internal mass reduction, or complementary field propulsion for high speeds. But while exploring this A and B distinction under codename Astra, there is a fascinating tangent I want to cover. Let's reference Secret Machines by Tom DeLonge and A.J. Hartley, an extremely famous science fiction novel in the UFO community that fuses the imagination of DeLonge with actual events obtained from U.S. military and government sources, a literary device known as a roman à clef. Facts in this book were allegedly given to DeLonge by advisors such as the commander of the Air Force Research Lab at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, multiple Lockheed Martin Skunk Works officials such as Eric Schrock, and others. This excellent book makes numerous mentions to an Astra Black Triangle reverse-engineered craft, quote,
"The craft itself, according to its data manual, was triangular and was named the Astra 3B, but we just call it the Locust," said Beaker with a smile. "He was proud to be connected to it. The Locust had control layouts unlike those used in any aircraft he had ever seen. Controls that were not just familiar, but counterintuitive to anyone with a basic sense of aviation or aerospace physics," end quote.
But what I really want to draw attention to here is the description of the Astra's control mechanism. When characters in the film operate the Astra TR-3B Locust, the pilot's chair looked disappointingly like that from an F-16. But on the left armrest of the pilot seat sat a red sphere sitting in a cradle. Quote,
"Alan turned the sphere under his hand, and the craft rotated cleanly, too cleanly in the air. He then applied a little thrust and was moving, the landmarks of Paris, including the Eiffel Tower, zipping past them in a blur. He pursed his lips. State of the art it may be, but it didn't feel like flight. No aircraft could pivot on a dime like he had just done," end quote.
Quote,
"He engaged the manual system and cupped his hand over the red trackball on his armrest. He rolled it gently and the Locust pivoted in place." Quote, "He engaged the manual system and cupped his hand over the red trackball on the armrest. He rolled it gently and the Locust pivoted in place. He did it again, applying a little thrust with his other hand, and the ship changed direction again, leaping hard to the west and then climbing in a dizzying spiral before screaming back to the southeast. Of course, there was no screaming, except perhaps inside Alan's head, as the laws of physics seemed to implode with each movement the craft made. No sound, no torque, no g-force, no inertia,"
end quote. Now, of course, this passage material is interesting, but why do I bring this up? Well, because the control scheme in this is the exact same sphere mechanism primary witness Brad Sorensen and aerospace illustrator Mark McCandlish claimed the alien reproduction vehicle Fluxliners utilized. See on screen Mark McCandlish's drawing of the trackball used to control the flying saucer. Countless comparisons to the 1988 saucer ARV encounter have been made so far in this project. Perhaps the Fluxliner and TR-3B are born of the same programs. With disclosures as impactful and spellbinding as Fouché's, his story attracted a great deal of attention and controversy. So, I'd briefly like to mention the contentious arguments that waged war against Fouché in the early and mid-2010s. This controversy is quite complex, and I have zero skin in this game, so we will simply try and analyze the statements made criticizing and supporting Fouché and the story of the TR-3B. Let us draw out a few key players here. Jeremy Rice, aka Alien Scientist. David Hamilton, author of Secret Space Program Andrew Johnson. UFO researcher Dan Benkert, and Master Sergeant Fouché himself. On his website, alienscientist.com, Jeremy Rice posted some startling opinions on Fouché after discussing Edgar's autobiography and very real military documents. Jeremy stated the TR-3B testimony was, quote, information that has no technical value and was likely fabricated by Ed in an effort to combine stories about the Nazi Bell device with the Belgian wave of triangular UFO sightings, so that his story would be more believable to the UFO research community, end quote. This claim was based off criticism of Ed stating the TR-3B utilized mercury-based plasma systems, alongside strong opinions after years of friendship with the Master Sergeant. After meeting Edgar in 2009, Jeremy would view the veteran as a close friend and legitimate whistleblower for years, quote, after having known Edgar Fouché for the past 4 years, I must say that he is one of the most deceitful and manipulative people that I have ever met personally, end quote. Jeremy would accuse this behavior as stemming from PTSD-driven rampant alcoholism. Jeremy would even state Edgar claimed to have flown a TR-3B one night whilst intoxicated. However, he provides no evidence or receipts of this statement. Author Andrew Johnson, who conducted numerous interviews with Fouché and formed a close friendship on the contrary, spoke very highly of the man. Positions against Edgar from Jeremy Rice and an individual known as David Hamilton crutch on a few key points outside of what Jeremy viewed as a lack of compelling physics behind the TR-3B. Faked military documents and a photo of the F-117A stealth fighter. On an undisclosed date, Edgar sent Jeremy an image alleging to picture Fouché alongside a crew observing the F-117 prototype at Area 51 between 1977 and 1981. Rise claimed Ed stole the photo from an article titled F-117A Senior Trend. The photographer of this image would even respond, quote, I cannot tell you who is in that photo, but I can tell you that Mr. Fouché doesn't know what he is talking about, end quote. My issue here is actually Jeremy's initial emails to the photographer Dan. Alien Scientist's email was overwhelmingly charged with leading statements against Edgar, providing links to his full disclosures on TR-3B while stating, quote, Ed has constructed a series of lies around this picture being and stationed at Groom Lake. Many of us do not believe Ed at all, end quote. This is not how one elicits an unbiased and objective response. In 2013, YouTuber David Hilton posted a video titled Edgar Fouché Fake Documents, which saw subsequent videos posted by Jeremy. It is worth noting both of these projects have been unlisted and removed from YouTube. Whether this is due to walking back the statements or to prevent further controversy, I am not sure. Hilton constructed a group email with Jeremy Rice, Dan B., and Andrew Johnson, author of Secret Program and supporter of Fouché, after a series of extensive interviews with the witness, to discuss the video allegedly exposing Fouché. Hilton stated, quote, after knowing Ed on a personal level since February of 2012, it is my opinion that he made up slash lied about everything. I've caught him in so many lies and contradictions that I can't keep up with them all. It's not really something that can be completely hashed out in an email, end quote. This statement is rather shocking to me, as alongside historical documents provided by Fouché, numerous documents highlighting Fouché's military service were pried from FOIA by Hilton himself. While we cannot view this video or further context of Hilton claiming Fouché is a liar, we can analyze Edgar's response on the Outpost Forum in July of 2014. Here, Edgar addressed the points Hilton seemingly made in his video. By his response and defense of the documents, it appears Hilton attempted to address only small inconsistencies within the documents. such as small indentations, variable pressure on letters, physical degradation of source documents and copies, due to Hilton and Rice retracting their video, I must conclude they conceded these claims against Fouché. Hilton additionally made some startling comments to the aforementioned Dan B. in a June 2012 Skype conversation. Now, Dan B. is not to be confused with Dan Barish. This is UFO researcher Dan Benkert, who has co-authored excellent work with Michael Schrat. Benkert has been a staunch reporter of Fouché after knowing him personally, and once offered a fascinating and worthy counter-explanation to a March 19, 2016 article titled, "Edgar Fouché's TR-3B is Most Likely a Hoax." Anyways, speaking to Dan B., Hilton would make some extremely startling remarks, such as, quote, "Actually, I work for an agency that monitors things you shouldn't do. Go ahead and tell people. They won't believe you," end quote. And, quote, "I now control Ed, not you." Funny how things work out, isn't it? The exposer becomes a tool of control, end quote. Historically, accounts of witnessing NHI craft or NHI crash retrievals contain uniform elements. These craft and technologies of unknown origin seem almost perfect. No seams, no rivets, no bolts, almost as if the craft are 3D printed. Some of these craft feature entirely smooth bodies or what humans would describe as windows, yet some of the craft often appear beautiful and perfect in appearance. This is almost never seen in triangular craft sightings. Let us analyze some of these cases.
They've been seen almost in every country by every possible culture, so it's a worldwide phenomenon. We've got a case over here of a red one with this exhaust port here. We've got a case in Detroit. We've got Belgium cases. So a brief cross-section of these aircraft have been seen all around the world. The primary features of these triangles, they usually have a white light on the corner of each of the triangle. Some of these are between 200 and 300 feet across. This midsection is generally about 20 feet across. And then there's always this interesting structural work on the bottom and probably a red or amber light in the center of the bottom section of the craft. That's kind of the overall view of what we see here.
Let's travel back to October 28, 1993 to Croton Falls, New York, in the midst of the Hudson Valley UFO flap, and analyze the testimony of Jim Cook. Cook, a biomedical engineer, was driving to his Hudson River Valley home when he encountered a truly bizarre craft. Near the Croton Falls Reservoir, Cook spotted aircraft lights approach the water level dropping very fast. The lights appeared to hover before blinking out. Cook, walking out of his car to the shoreline, spotted a triangular object hovering 200 feet away, 15 feet above the water. 9 red lights appeared on the triangle side, and a red break of light from the underside began to probe the water. Now let's move to the year 2000 in the town of St. Clair in southern Illinois, where numerous small town residents and police officers reported a triangular shaped craft. In the early morning of January 5th, police officers reported a UFO near Scott Air Force Base. The craft was massive, an elongated black triangle, roughly 75 feet long and 40 feet wide. At each corner sat a bright white light underwaving in luminosity. One smaller flashing red light sat just below the object's midline near the rear two lights. The back of the object appeared rectangular and illuminated in white light. Through the middle of the light, running lengthwise, was a band of multicolored illumination. It was stated there were no individual colored lights visible. Rather, it appeared as a band of various colors which blended into each other. A second police officer reported the object heading in a westerly direction, matching the description of initial reports. This officer, Martin, added he believed the object to be maybe 75 to 100 yards in width at an altitude of 1,000 feet. The object was estimated to travel at a loitering speed of 15 miles per hour before accelerating to 100 miles per hour. Let's also jump to Madison, Wisconsin on November 22, 1985, where multiple eyewitnesses described a triangular, dull, roughly 40 foot across craft. Excellent researcher Michael Schrat extracted a quote from one of the eyewitnesses who stated the underside of the craft resembled, quote, "the back of a refrigerator, like a collection of condensation pipes that ran back and forth," end quote. One can't help but wonder here if this craft seen was an alien reproduction triangle utilizing prototype propulsion systems requiring a massive heat exchanger apparatus. Similar oddities can be observed in the United Kingdom's infamous sighting by Colin Saunders in March of 1999. Saunders and his family, upon driving home from dinner, observed a 50-foot-long triangular-shaped craft that pitched up and down at roughly a 15-degree angle. Colin claimed the craft bobbed as if it were submerged in water. The exterior of the craft was described as a flowing liquid mercury, which reminds me closely of Lance Corporal Jonathan Weygandt's UFO crash retrieval case, in which Weygandt observed a crashed UAP with skin described as the mother of pearl effect. The top of the craft was not flat, but more angled, with a strange raised pattern on top Saunders believed to be some sort of docking mechanism with a larger craft. And this same pattern existed on the underside of the craft. Parasitic aircraft are not uncommon in human-made airplanes. In fact, in the 1970s, USAF proposed a Boeing 747 airborne aircraft carrier to house an array of fighter jets. This sloping top also sounds very dissimilar from the TR-3B, but may sound extremely similar to the craft we're about to discuss. Analyzing the strange lights, fixtures, systems, and appearances of these triangles seen throughout the 1980s to early 2000s, we must ask, were these craft human-made? Were they prototypes or iterations of TR-3B? Or were these all the result of separate legacy programs? Or were these flying triangles somewhere in between?
This is a photo of a UFO that reportedly crashed in Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Now, I know you don't believe that story, but just hear me out. Now, Ellen's Air Base, the same base that we're at right now, the same base that for some strange reason doesn't appear on your U.S. government map, is supposedly one of the six sites where parts from the wreckage were shipped.
Mulder, are you suggesting that the military is flying UFOs?
No. Planes built using UFO technology.
Fascinating lines of research fully independent of Fouché's TR-3B leads to a very similar reverse-engineered triangular craft known by disgruntled engineers as the XF-131 Super Sentinel. Let's visit respected artist Bill McDonald, an old-school freelance commercial illustrator, concept designer, forensic reconstruction illustrator, and current sworn law enforcement professional. I have featured McDonald's work in multiple projects, most notably his designs with Dr. Robert Wood of the extraterrestrial entities known as EB-1 and EB-2, described within the Majestic 12 Special Operations Manual, as well as his fantastic work on the Roswell craft and the 1976 Tehran, Iran UFO incident. McDonald additionally featured in a fantastic four-part series on Michael Schratt's YouTube channel titled Roswell Revisited. I myself have had the pleasure of speaking with Mr. McDonald and hold an extremely high opinion of him, including speaking on the drawing and case we are about to discuss. And here I present to you the beautiful piece titled Tehachapi Triangle, 1992. McDonald met with four old engineers at a Denny's in Antelope Valley, California in the spring of 1992. All four engineers, two from Northrop Grumman and two from Lockheed Martin, were fed up with egregious security impositions negatively impacting their lives. All four engineers were subject to extreme project compartmentalization, with each having a piece of the puzzle for the name of the triangular craft Antelope Valley residents had been reporting for numerous years, the XF-131 Super Sentinel. Each of these engineers wanted their story told without threats to their lives, jail time, or stripping of pensions. Does this sound familiar to anybody about the current state of UAP whistleblowers? The four men had found each other over a number of decades while being employed at various facilities surrounding the California high desert. The two Northrop employees hailed from a facility called Tehan, or Tehachapi Ranch, by UFO researchers. McDonald claims he was able to confirm this testimony through friends of his father and his father's mentor, Robert Scandrett, who worked for Rockwell International Strategic Systems Division. The other two claimed to work for Ben Rich at Lockheed Skunk Works in Glendale, California, and worked the radar cross-section range known as Hellendale. First off, let's quickly recall a similarity to TR-3B. When Fouché asked if Kelly Johnson was the senior project designer for TR-3B, he responded, quote, "No, it would have been Ben Rich," end quote. Second, the Hellendale facility, located very closely to Edwards Air Force Base in Palmdale USAF Plant 42, two locations I have directly accused of housing reverse engineering programs. would later be accused by Stephen Greer and others as a currently ongoing black budget deep sixed UAP reverse engineering location.
Now, interestingly, the Senate Intelligence and Armed Services Committee and other senior officials had no idea of this. The top people in Special Forces who are outside this illegal black project system didn't know about it. I had known about it since the 90s, but I'd never, of course, flown directly over it because it's classified airspace and very sensitive. So you can see what looks like a trough and a runway. It's just where the man-made UFOs that we've been building since the 1954-55 come out. They go up and they hover. They're silent. They're electrogravitic, anti-grav. The diamond on the left, you see that looks like a runway with a diamond? It's not a runway because they don't need to run and get, there's not an aerodynamic. They just go boom up. But they're placed over different diamonds. I have a whole series of video and pictures of these we don't have time to go through. And that's where they're put at various elevations and then struck with an electromagnetic weapon to see if it's hardened enough to withstand conflict. Right.
5 years before Greer would first label the Lockheed Martin Hellendale plant as a program location, McDonald stated the location was designed to be hidden in plain sight. Utilizing the cover of a radar cross-section facility, the location's exterior features a storm drainage flood control channel, which allegedly truly serves as a short runway or platform for the testing of these craft. And here is where things get very, very, very interesting. As I mentioned earlier, I have spoken to McDonald about the XF-131, and he maintains the four engineers were indeed delivering true testimony. I even asked for the individual's identities or leads on the case so I might contact and interview them myself. He has sworn to protect their identities. In the Tehachapi Triangle drawing, McDonald exclaimed if viewers recognize the craft. Fox Network contracted McDonald's work and made a computer render of the vehicle for the first regular season episode of The X-Files in the episode titled Deep Throat. This fantastic episode, probably my favorite of the whole series, follows the main characters investigating the disappearance of a USAF test pilot. A mysterious informant tells one of the lead investigators, Mulder, to stay away from the case. Utilizing research and testimony I played at the beginning of this section, Mulder learned that the craft, the Super Sentinel, was a reverse-engineered craft from the 1947 Roswell, New Mexico case. Investigating the airfield late at night, a triangular-shaped craft darts and hovers over Mulder before rapidly speeding away. Mulder is then captured by Air Force personnel and given a cocktail to forget about what he saw, but not before he caught a glimpse of the craft in a hangar. Rumors persist of the X-Files screenwriter Chris Carter mentioning he had been approached by unknown military brass who asked how he knew so much. However, I can find no credible sources here. But what I can find is reference paranormal writer and 25-year FBI investigator veteran and inspiration for much of the X-Files, John D'Souza. In 2023, D'Souza put out a video on YouTube titled, John D'Souza, 25-year veteran of FBI, John D'Souza is exposing the truth of the UAP invasion. And while I voraciously disagree with the Project Bluebeam fake invasion narrative, D'Souza does make some very interesting remarks directly stating the first season of The X-Files was based off true cases he investigated.
Okay, the craziest one that I'm still not supposed to talk about, but I can say that it was featured in, I think it was about the first episode of The X-Files, or maybe it was the second of the first season. By the way, they used my stories during the first season of The X-Files, and then after that, they went to other, they no longer used my cases. However, the rest of The X-Files was was all based on true stories as well. However, I would say the craziest UFO, the craziest paranormal case was when I was sent to a military base. I mean, I can say in general terms, I was sent to a military base. We observed a military base where they had several disappearances that were associated with the appearance of UFOs in the area. And there were UFOs that the military base said, the commander said, I don't know what to do with this. I mean, I'm at my wit's end. And so we went to observe these UFOs that had been coming, to the outskirts of this military base, and on a regular basis. And they were filled with light. They were filled with light, almost like they didn't even appear metal anymore. And they would just come. They would come to the edge of this forest, and there was a group of people who would just do a regular observance of these things. And so myself and my partner, we went, and we were with those people. And for some reason, one of the UFOs picked us out for some reason and came directly at us. And just, it appeared to land on us at some point. All the people ran, everyone ran, including us. But it appeared to land on us, but then it didn't, because it disappeared somehow. And then we had people from the base who took me in against my will. They took me in and they interrogated me as to what my knowledge was of the UFOs.
It is endlessly fascinating. Chris Carter of the X-Files specifically contracted McDonald's Tehachapi Triangle, an allegedly real reverse-engineered ARV, for an episode based on true events. This case is seeing further investigation for myself behind the scenes. Hey guys, it's UAP Gerb, and thank you so much for joining me today into this dive into the flying triangles and alien reproduction vehicles. Guys, I know it's been a while, and I want to thank each and every one of you for sticking by me. This November has been one heck of a month, with going out to see and do a show on Jesse Michaels, to going to the hearings, to going to Seoul. It's been insanely busy, so I appreciate everybody sticking by me. Please look forward to the Jesse Michaels interview, or kind of project, and the Eric Davis interview, which I think everybody will find fascinating. I'll probably use clips from in every single project I do from now on, here coming shortly. So let's kind of break down what we discussed today. I, for one, was super excited to take on this project because I think whenever people think of triangular-shaped UAP to ARV to anything, they associate it with TR-3B. And a lot of the time, people don't really know the full story of Edgar Fouché and kind of the story behind TR-3B. I know when getting kind of B-roll and footage and images for this video, quite often the XF-131 Super Sentinel, the TR-3A, and another craft called the TR-3E are often confused for TR-3B. Now, the reason I didn't cover TR-3E is this is often used as kind of a toy model based off reverse engineered craft. And I have actually talked to some artists who have drawn this TR-3E. For those of you kind of listening right now saying, what the heck is he talking about? This is the triangle design that almost has sort of a concave lines in between the vertexes, with kind of fins and grates similar to the TR-3B and a smallish dome on top. So maybe we'll visit TR-3E at this time, but I didn't see too much evidence or worthwhile study here. So I know sort of the breakdown of these craft can be quite complex, so let's just go through that real fast. On one hand, we have XF-131 Super Sentinel, which varies greatly to the TR-3B and other triangular designs due to the almost pyramid shape on top that is most similar to the 1999 Kirby England sighting. And on this side, we have the Aurora program, let's just say. Within Aurora, there's codename Astra, which is the TR-3B. Astra standing for Advanced Stealth Technology Reconnaissance Aircraft, and the TR and TR-3B standing for Tactical Reconnaissance. The TR-3B is the reverse-engineered craft that is gravity-resistant with companies such as Sandia, Lawrence Livermore, Lockheed, Northrop, spearheaded by CIA, NSA, etc., etc. Also in that same Aurora program, possibly, is the TR-3A, which may use advanced stealth concepts such as electrogravitics for internal mass reduction or something like pulse detonation engines. But let's remember that this craft is generally considered more prosaic, with a cockpit and so forth, and this may have been what crashed at Boscombe Down in 1994. So there's the TR-3A, the TR-3B, and possibly the TR-3E. Remember what Fouché said. He said there's a whole host of craft in the TR, the tactical reconnaissance line, just the same with the strategic reconnaissance, the SR line. You know, there's the SR-71, and Fouché alleged that at least concepts of an SR-74 and 75 were in development while he worked within the defense world and so forth. So I almost find the description that Ed gives of DARS and other kind of contractors almost more interesting than the TR-3B itself. For example, looking at his FOIA Pride documents and seeing the AFFTC, the Air Force Flight Test Center, is really critical for me to be able to analyze this story and start to relay this to other stories or other investigation I've done. You know, him talking about Project Red Light with EGNG for the DOE, while EGNG runs Area 51, we can also see that Sandia and I think it's Lawrence Livermore were partners for NEST, Nuclear Emergency Search Teams or something like that, but NEST team. So there's all these delicious little tie-ins, especially when Fouché mentions TREAT. As we saw, there's one mention publicly available of TREAT I could possibly find. And this could be the Army INSCOM under Stubblebine's version of the Men in Black. But, you know, sticking to the video topic, I don't know enough about the physics of TR-3B to kind of dispute the craft like Jeremy Rise does. And speaking of that, guys, I'm not looking to get involved in any drama or throw my hat in the ring and defend or criticize Fouché. I simply thought it important to, when you have disclosures as impactful and key as Fouché's, to say, hey, there have been individuals who have brought up issues with certain things he's done. And I just thought it important to relay those and kind of throw in my opinion of what I thought about some of the criticisms. I'm not really trying to get involved or squabble with any of the players still active. So just know that. I do that in good faith by just kind of talking about the arguments. So TR-3B XF-131 Super Sentinel. TR-3B, there's 200-foot test models and 600-foot operational models. The description of the craft down to the diffuse red light on the bottom is very similar to what numerous people have relayed seen. I mean, I'll scroll through any YouTube video of a triangle sighting, or I'll talk to anybody at jiu-jitsu, and they'll all say that, yeah, I've had a UFO sighting, or hey, my uncle or somebody I know did. They saw a triangle. It had three white lights and a red one. These sort of sightings seem almost ubiquitous. They seem very common. And then there's something like the XF-131 Super Sentinel, whose size is much smaller, whose underside is far more intriguing with the... you know, we didn't really dive into the physics or the engineering because that information is unavailable to myself. But with a large light that seems almost maneuverable on bottom, followed by three pairs of lights kind of on each side of the triangle. I hope everybody enjoyed seeing that in X-Files. I myself am kind of a new X-Files fan, so I've seen that episode and watching Mulder kind of pursue this subject about the Air Force test pilots who have gone missing just to encounter the triangle, which was reverse engineered from technology at Roswell, is so intriguing to me. I myself put a lot of weight on both Fouché and the TR-3B as well as the XF-131 Super Sentinel. I have been and will continue to be investigating that specific craft and that specific story, as it is just extremely intriguing to myself. But I do want to know what everybody thought about TR-3B. You know, after analyzing the full extent to which Fouché gave testimony, I don't think his story is as simple as, hey, he saw the Belgian UFO wave and he's trying to glom on. I don't think it's as simple as that. Now, the most valid criticism of Ed is, besides his three sightings, which were not under program operations, he did not work firsthand on the TR-3B. Much of this information was relayed from Gerald, from Bud, from Doc, from Sal, and so forth. So he is ultimately relaying secondhand information. Now, of course, Gerald died pretty soon after their first meeting, but if any of these other gentlemen are still around, Fouché is not, he has passed, and can share this information, please reach out to me. Let's discuss this a little more, because The way I see things right now is that there's likely not one, at least two types of ARV that DOD, the Air Force 412th Test Group, and legacy programs have. This is something like the Fluxliner, the flying saucer craft that either operates off of electrogravitics, magnetohydrodynamics, or zero-point energy systems. And then there's something a little less pretty in the triangles, and these likely operate off of electrogravitics or MFD devices, MHD devices, as Fouché talked about. You know, the triangles are not capable of what we would assume NHI and what we analyze NHI craft are capable of with the six observables. Fouché will talk about the TR-3B doing impossible maneuvers, right turns that are very close to actual right turns. However, the speed limitations of this craft and so forth, all of these things, the internal inertial dampening, none of these things are too extreme. And this is one of the things that stuck out to me about the Fluxliner as well. You know, the F4 Phantom jump seats, the off-the-shelf components with this really interesting reverse-engineered or copied propulsion system. The TR-3B and the Triangles, the XF-131 Super Sentinel to extent, seem very similar. That it's a human attempt to reproduce something fantastic. Now, what are the NHI Triangles? Why, if it's true, did Psalm 101 in 1954 say that these triangles are new and little is known about them? You know, we can start to analyze the triangle programs in the 80s, 90s, possibly even earlier in the 70s, but, you know, in the 50s, these triangles, are they NHI or are they a breakaway civilizations, a precursor to programs? These questions still exist. These questions are super interesting. How many prototypes of TR-3B or XF-131 Super Sentinel, or possibly these triangles are called something else completely that we are none the wiser to. How many prototypes were they? You know, the heat exchangers underneath, the pyramid-shaped top in Kirby, England, as a docking mechanism, the sightings in southern Illinois with these interesting strips of lights. The triangles are fascinating. For the error reporting trends of triangles comprising 1-4%, you would be astonished at how many people have reported seeing triangular-shaped craft. So I'm chewing up a lot of time here, guys. I'm just so excited to be back. I'd like to thank everybody for watching, and we are back to our regularly scheduled programming. Thank you all so much for joining me into this look, into Fouché, into TR-3B, into flying triangles, into ARV. I'll catch everybody next time. Thank you so much. Bye.